This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
I mean, it really is. It's a revolution, not just in podcasts, but I think in society, don't you, Jenny? Thank you, Eli Braden.
Yeah, I kind of think, Jenny, this is maybe should be like an anthem for
I think it is
everything
for all that we're fighting for the WGA.
This should be blaring at every picket, like every place around town. That should just be blaring in a loop.
This is our We Shall Overcome, I think, in a lot of ways, don't you?
It's very Norma Rae for me,
yeah.
Personally. You know, a little bit for you. Y'all look alike more.
Well, Jenny, I want to just set like the table here. We are obviously in the middle of a writer's strike and a SAG-AFTRA strike, and part of the rules of that is we're not going to be promoting projects that we've been a part of, which hampers our introduction. But I mean, this actor and personality and voice of a generation is he's iconoclastic. So he doesn't need,
you know, I was actually gonna say, like, when you said iconic, I was gonna say also sexual icon.
Oh my god.
Wouldn't you say?
Not only can I say it, and you know me, Jenny, I'm straight as can be, but I can't come unless I'm thinking about him.
You know, and you know me, I'm like, I'm open to everyone, but like, I would, you know, I don't care who I was with. I would put them in a wood chipper for a chance.
Stephen Weber?
Stephen Weber. Yes, exactly.
Stephen Weber.
Are you talking about me?
Yeah. Stephen, turn on your mic.
Oh my, Steve!
Oh, you're good. You're good.
Meeting you here.
Oh hi, horn dog. Yeah. Now you've caught me. You've caught me at the stage of life when that really doesn't mean anything to me anymore.
Oh no!
Not the affirmation, but just the, like, you know, the sex act is just, it's about 11th on the list after. And Danny and I were talking about this after the Japanese toilet.
Oh my god!
proper shoe insoles.
How great are orthotics?
Oh, Dr.
Oh my
Scholl.
God! Yeah. Dr. Scholl, getting sleep. Let me see.
Can I put an addendum onto that?
Put an addendum on it.
Only getting up twice in the night to pee for sleep.
That's not bad for me.
Victory like no other.
Yeah. Jenny doesn't understand. She's still a young person.
Well, listen, I feel young at heart, but guess who's starting to sweat in her sleep?
The change is coming. Baboon.
45 years old, and all of a sudden I woke up, a little sweaty, little sweaty Betty in my sleep. I'm like, look at me. But I'm still vibrant. I still get my period. Point every month, but
is that sulfuric smell? Your rotting eggs? Is that what's happening? Is that what we're picking up here?
I don't know what you think menopause is, Danny, because it's not that.
Isn't it? It has to do with like
sulfuric rot.
It doesn't. It,
but you know, on the old show Alice. Remember the show Alice?
And yes.
Smell my rotting eggs. The first pitch at Kiss My Grits. It became Kiss My Grits. But at first it was like, smell my rotting eggs.
Yeah, Polly Holiday had notes. She had notes.
Yeah, Vic Tayback kept like things. He kept passing out.
So, you know, obviously, Stephen, thank you for going. I actually, Stephen and I know each other and have through a mutual, well, first of all, we knew each other from Twitter and from work, but then we also have our mutual friend, Harlan Coben, the great
Baltimore. Yeah, I know Harlan. We're Twitter friends. Yes.
And Stephen is the voice of Harlan's Books on Tape.
That's right. Books on Tape. Okay, old man.
Oh, my audio God.
Well, books on, books on, yeah, books on 8-track.
Yeah. No. No.
Books on reel to reel. Yeah.
Gramophone.
Right. Yeah.
That's right. Wax cylinders.
Wax cylinders.
I didn't know you did the audiobooks for Harlan.
Yeah, I've done a bunch of them. And I've, there's so much fun to do. I'm doing another one, a great one called Mr. Texas.
My ears are burning.
A fantastic, fantastic book. I'll tell you who it's by. A great author. He's probably won awards and everything. But, you know, to get paid to read is absolutely great fun, you know. But also they're mostly great books. And Harlan's books are kind of fantastic, actually. Yeah.
I would think those would be a dream to read.
Oh, they're fun, man. They're so fun to read.
He paces himself. Danny,
didn't you went to high school with Harlan?
I did. He was Harlan was a senior when I was a sophomore. And weirdly enough, my really closest friend in high school was a kid by the name of Todd Christie. We're still in touch. And his was his older brother, Chris Christie.
Oh, wow.
Wonder what happened to that guy.
Y'all's high school reunions must be a treat.
Well, when I got out of my high school, I was 10th on the list. Like Jason Alexander, yeah. Also high school. And it was in New Jersey. And it was I said, at any other high school, I would have been first. I can't believe, this is
Yeah.
The author is Lawrence Wright.
Oh, and, yeah.
Oh, I love Lawrence Wright.
Okay.
He wrote, my God, that Scientology book of his is.
This book, Mr. Texas, is so amazingly hilarious.
Really?
Oh, and nuanced, and it's a send-up of Texas politics, you know, and it's...
Love that.
It's so great. Anyway.
I'm curious. There's something I don't know. When you're about to read, because I'm curious about that. I mean, everybody knows you're can IMDb you and all of that. But when you're going to one of those gigs to read, are you pre-reading the book and making notes? Are you...
No. I'm a bad actor in that regard, but I just
or maybe you're that
the first
good.
Read. It's a cold read every time.
Wow. Really?
Yeah, yeah. And that's
wow. That's bold.
It's mostly is a function of my laziness, and which is a bigger question. I'm not even kidding. I mean, it's a bigger question as to all my regrets. My regrets in life have to do with laziness. Me in too. Some form or another, emotional, yeah. Psychological, physical, whatever. But this actually sort of, I actually developed a kind of ability to do this. And so that's what I do. And it seems to be working, you know, it seems to be an accidental skill that I developed.
Well, you're so quick-witted in general, just in talking to you and obviously from your Twitter. And you're just... funny person. I was wondering, did you have improv training? I mean, you could easily have done that, but
I didn't have really improv training. I was always class clown and all that crap, but
where'd you grow up first?
I grew up in New York in Queens, which is the Queens is the New Jersey of New York in a way.
But the first year of my life in Bayside.
Ah, yes, Baysides. Yes, my friend. So I grew up there, and really any sort of comedy training I might have had was probably gotten from watching all old classic TV shows. And I guess for my age, as you were probably, Danny, I'm not sure about Jenny, I was enamored with the Marx Brothers and all those other, and less so than the knockabout stuff like the Three Stooges, you know, so more verbal stuff. And I just began to kind of develop a little facility for that. But over the years, I became more acquainted with guys like Sid Caesar and, of course, Mel Brooks and people that seem to be fast on their feet. And I guess I unconsciously aimed for that stuff. But, I mean, my God, you know, I've really loved being an audience at so many of these improvs, from Second City to UCB to, there's a great, oh, is it too loud?
Are you at a biker rally? Or?
Oh God, I'm in my house. I live in Venice, and occasionally people, low flying jets, like blah, like they strafe the street.
Out of Santa Monica, yeah.
Gang jets. what was I saying? Oh, and I was recently, I was with Cedric Yarborough, who's part of this group called The Black Version. And The Black Version, they do a show, and Phil Lamar and Cedric and several other amazing improvisers. I guess the point, it's the most incredible improvisational group I've ever seen. And, I've seen fantastic. Second City's great, I don't know. I don't know what your question is. I'm so tired.
No, that's interesting. It was more about that, and kind of going back to that. Like, we always ask people who are like writers or actors and even astronauts, like, which we've had on here before. It's like, when did you know you wanted to do this? Like, what was the? Did you, like, for me, I always wanted to be in comedy. Ever since, like, it was the same. I would watch, Saturday Night Live or SCTV, and it's like, oh, I got to do that. But for you, what was it like? Did you always know?
I mean, the seminal moment for me was probably doing a play in the third grade. We were doing an adaptation of Where the Wild Things Are, at my school, PS117, Queens. It was a real post-war red brick building in, lower middle class world. And I had a small part as the dragon, which actually takes up two pages of Maurice Sendak's book. Oh. So I was the dragon, and I started ad-libbing profusely. And getting laughs, and that was the first shot.
Yeah, you got your first free hit of the heroine.
Yeah,
that's it. Yes. That we've all
exactly.
Gotten.
And now we chase the dragon for the rest of our lives.
Oh, very good, Jenny. Bravo! Yes. Even though you don't have your camera on it, bravo.
Thank you.
No, that was great. You. And then did you go to college with an eye for that?
I went to. Less about comedy.
What about acting?
Yeah, I went to the High School of Performing Arts. Famed
high school?
Yeah. Wait, you went to? Did you wear leg warmers and shit?
I did.
Oh.
Because I had skinny legs and I was ashamed of my legs, But I did wear leg warmers, but no dancing on cars. But it used to be, the original building was on 46th Street between 6th and 7th. And it was New York in the 70s. So it was really kind of grimy and gritty. Yeah. And looking back, you can sentimentalize it and had a particular kind of charm, but it was fantastic, And there was, recently was my 40th reunion, which nobody even sent me an invitation to, which is really nice. But it was great. It was a great school, a lot of fun. And that's where I started kind of seriously applying myself, or that stuff was seriously applied to me and the other students. And then I went to a college called SUNY Purchase, SUNY being State University of New York.
Oh, really?
It was like the more liberal and virtually and lower. Less expensive Juilliard.
Yeah, well, you know? Yeah, no, I knew. I went to Syracuse, and so I knew. Yeah, I was seeing a girl from SUNY Purchase, an actor type there.
Now, Jenny, how did you get started? Because when I first became aware of you. When I was on Twitter, and I haven't been on Twitter in years, I got rid of that. But that's when I first kind of started really reading all your amazing stuff. I mean, did you start in comedy? Did you start performing, writing? Do you do any of that stuff?
Well, I started off. I worked in news. I went to school at Sam Houston State University. I got a degree in broadcast journalism. I was a sports producer for years and news producer, and then. Wow. I started doing comedy on the side, actually, more through Twitter, just writing jokes, and then got a following, and then, had the opportunity to start, get an agent and write pilots, and I do stand-up now, and, it just kind of happened.
You were writing tweets while, they were
in the newsroom.
In the newsroom when there'd be, a car chase going on. And
it became an outlet for me in a way, because, when you're producing news, you're writing the news, and it's depressing. Your day begins and ends, and it is not upbeat. So when Twitter happened, that's what Danny was saying. I just would start in the newsroom, I'd write whatever story, and then I'd go, "Ooh, I just thought of something," and then get my phone and tweet pretty much about the same exact topic that I just made a serious, you know,
thing,
and then make a joke about it on Twitter.
But I remember it really cutting through. I mean, that's a hard thing to do.
No, she did great. I mean, people who were, you know, it was like such a golden time then because there were people mm-hmm. who already had careers. Like, I know for you, Jenny, it was probably Patton Oswalt.
Patton Oswalt was one that was like really, really, really pushing and right. helping me. Like, I didn't even know him, but he was like sort of following me and was like, I don't know who this person is, but y'all follow her. Like, he was really like a person that kind of helped push me. But with like Danny, myself, I know like Rob Delaney, there was...
Yeah.
Several of Megan Amram. There was a group of us that got
Megan Amram, another started on Twitter. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Megan and I did, we did a panel at South by Southwest a few years back. And that was the subject was people who turned Twitter into a career, like who were doing something else and got popular on Twitter and then were able to turn that popularity into a career in comedy. Yeah. And so like, you know, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now if it wasn't for Twitter helping launch my, you know, give me an audience. It's very cool. I mean, like, I can't say that I know a lot. I know anyone else that had the same like exact path that I had, but
no one in show business does though. I remember like one of the writers was maybe Dan O'Shannon I worked with, but like we're talking to like kids and they're like, how do you get through? And it's like, there's no path. There's no working in the mailroom. It's like, he described it this way. It's like everybody who gets a career in show business, it's like you hack your way through a jungle and the path is behind you. And so everybody has to find their own sort of path through that shit.
Yeah. Like last week I was at the Comedy Store and I'm still learning. Like, I've been doing stand-up since 2015 now, was when I, like, really first started doing it, and I've been at it ever since. There's still things I don't know, and I remember when I would start off and somebody was like, hey, I can give you a spot on the show tomorrow night, and I'm looking around going, what's a spot? I don't even know what that means. So I'm like, cool, thanks, appreciate it. And I just kept
like
acting
an STD.
Like I... But when I was at the Comedy Store last week, I see the lineup for that night and where my name is kind of next to it. It says, it's a D-I and then P-H kind of next to my name. And I'm like, I don't even know what this means, but I'm just going to act like it's okay. And then I saw one of my comic buddies and I was like, hey, do you know why this says D-I-P-H like next to my name? My buddy started laughing because it has nothing to do with your name. They just randomly put it there, but that means drop in Pete Holmes.
Oh, that's
like, oh. I'm like, oh, so that's what that means? Cool, thanks. I just need someone to tell me. Because you don't go to school for this shit. You don't know what the hell these acronyms and shit mean. And I'm like, oh, does that mean like I did something like dumb idiot?
That's right.
I'm assuming it's something bad. I'm like, hey, buddy, man, you might tell me what the fuck that means. Like, no, it's cool. It just means Pete Holmes might drop in. Thank you.
I love that.
Cool. Don't you think? I feel like we're not Jenny so much, but maybe you and me, Danny. I feel like we've straddled eras in a way. Like from what you're talking about as a young writer or even as a young performer is more of the analog period. And now we're in the digital period. And so many of my references, not just cultural, but also kind of intellectual references about what I do and why I do it, were based on the old way of doing things. You know, it's now personified in the current corporate strike struggle that we're in, the epitome of what I'm talking about now, that, you know, the old way of doing things has been pretty much dispensed with. And so even talking to young, which I never do, you know, anytime I don't talk to young performers, they have no fucking interest in me anyway, you know, and or the ones that ever ask me, you know, how do I do XYZ? I don't know how to do XYZ anymore because it doesn't apply, you know, carrying around 8x10 shots of yourself and literally slipping them under the doors of casting offices and walking around. And that is so not what happens.
The first sitcom like when I was trying to spec sitcom, and I started as a joke writer, but when I was first like, I wanted to write a sitcom, the way I went to the Writers Guild, got copies of the scripts and transcribed them on a typewriter. Like I remember reading Levine and Isaacs's Cheers. I read a couple of their Cheers, and it was get to work with them later because they're the generation ahead of me. But to get to do like, so, you know, and I'm not like anti-progress. I like think like you have to be like really flexible. I'm just like, we'll be flexible, but you in the business side have to be flexible.
Sure.
Like, you can't pay because they're still paying us like on an analog model. So you're like, we're willing to get paid this much because we know that there's a residual effect.
Right.
We're willing
right.
to be paid per episode because, you know, we know like we'll do 20 episodes in 6 months, not six episodes in 6 months.
Right.
You know, so like they're happy to keep it that way because they get to make, someone's making all this money.
Yeah. Well, you know, it has to do with what we were talking about before, like the corporatization of everything. It's not just our industry. It's everything that's happening. It's like you said, late stage capitalism. I mean, I can rant on that all day.
Me too.
Even though I don't have any formal training in economics, it just seems to be pretty obvious.
It's very obvious.
Trickle down never worked, and you know, historically, when taxes are high, and there was a baseline philosophy that I guess most Americans, except the crazy fringiest people, believed in, you know, the people that fought World War II and all that stuff, you know, had the same idea of what constituted a kind of patriotism.
Exactly.
And, but I tell you, man, it feels so chaotic and it is epitomized by what's happening right now in our business. It's like it's almost trying to erase, not just minimize the human component in how money is made, let alone and, product, you know, and how
I know.
How
and, it's, created. And it is, it's disgusting on so many fucking levels that like, when is enough money enough? When is, you know, when, you know, and, you know, they take. And for me, the only corporate entity that isn't taking right now is our sponsor, who I'd like to tell you about right now.
Yeah.
By the way, that was the sponsor. I think that was maybe one of the, that's a top five transition. And we'll be putting out a CD of my best transitions to commercials, but
who is your sponsor? I want to know so I can buy whatever it is.
You're going to find out now.
Danny, that's the best one you've ever done.
Okay, let's include that. Let's include that transition.
Yes, that was beautiful.
We're back from that, and I want that in.
Yeah,
there.
And I've been, Danny, and tears are rolling down my cheeks.
Oh,
I'm how beautiful that transition.
That makes
factory male t-shirt.
That makes me so happy.
Rolling down her heavily Botoxed cheeks.
Yes,
over the bandages, and that's why. Yeah,
over the fillers. Yeah,
filler.
You should know Jenny doesn't have her camera on, and she has some convoluted reason. And I'm utterly convinced that she's had a ton of work done. So when you see her,
by the way, you could, but you know who has seen me recently is Guy.
Guy, is that true? Put your mic.
Guy came to Irvine and came to see me do stand up.
Guy,
that's correct, and I can confirm that Jenny has not gotten any kind of surgery.
Yeah, tits still look great though.
Looking Say it. Jenny.
Yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm. You hadn't seen her before. This might be where she's at.
Yeah. and by the way, Guy, was that the best performance you ever saw? Just go ahead and say yes.
It was hilarious. You killed.
Thank you.
She always
I know. It's fine. It's so not a big deal. Guy, come on. Where did that come from? So I was speaking of stand-up stuff. Danny, we both know that you started off in stand-up. You still do. You dabble.
Yeah, I haven't done it in a while, but yes.
Steven, is that something you've ever
wanted to do?
I did it once.
You're a funny guy. You're a funny guy.
Yeah. So funny. I did it on a dare. I had friends that I had a friend that actually managed Catch a Rising Star. This is in the
Oh, early 80s. Wow.
It's one of the first places I ever performed.
That fucking name. Yeah. Oh, my God.
That's where I passed at Catch Rising Star when I was 18 and then went to college. But, yeah.
Really?
And, yeah. And they somebody said, hey, why don't you go up? They dared me. He said, you know, just do like 5-7 minutes, something like that. I said, okay. And I spent, you know, 2 weeks cobbling together material that I thought would be okay. And they put me up between, I want to say, like Mario Joyner and, you know, it wasn't, they didn't put me up on a amateur night. They put me up a regular slate of comedians.
That's horrible.
I think Kevin Meaney was there,
oh,
I think.
God. Oh my God, I love him.
Who was hilarious.
Right.
Yeah. He's like, we're a big,
we're big pants people. I mean, and this guy could, he did the same, virtually the same act every time I saw him. And like crushed the room. So I went up and I did some vile jokes. And and because people were there to laugh, half of the room just laughed just because they laughed. And then the other half just studied me. The more kind of present half of the audience was looking at me. And it was absolutely catastrophic. And I only lasted a few minutes, and I couldn't hear myself talk. It was like when you go,
mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
and
you
did
were Charlie Brown's joke. Parents.
Yes, and I did. I think a joke about pus. I made a clit reference. You know, all the really witty stuff, and then I got off. And went right to the bar and did 2 or 3 successive shots of vodka. And that was it, man. It's hard to do that stuff.
I think that chunk you have on clit, though, would really play now. I mean, it was so bad.
There's not enough edgy clit jokes these days. You can probably dip your toe back into it. We're in the middle of a strike. Dip your toe back into it.
Well, you know, the picklitting. I'm pick. Clitting.
Oh, picklitting.
Oh.
By the way, if it's like a woman's, like a, you know, if we do the pussy hat, like that should be like, that should be a theme.
I'm canceling myself.
Yeah. So, obviously, I think most people got to know you on that.
A TV show. That's
a
right.
TV show.
Slang.
Yeah.
But what did you, what was the break? Like what were like the early break? What were like, oh, this is, cause we all go through, no matter how much confidence, is this going to be possible? What was like?
Well, the first big job, I guess, professional job I had was just out of college. And me and a friend who were in the same class at college looked enough alike so that we were recruited or cast in this PBS kind of TV movie about based on a Mark Twain story called Pudd'nhead Wilson, and where we were playing switchlings at birth. And take it easy. And and it was amazing because I can't remember how much I was making, but it was about 4 weeks working in West Virginia, and I had steak and shrimp every night. And
wow.
Ken Howard was in it, and the late president of SAG, and it was amazing, and it was, and I thought this is it, and we shot it, and then of course it came out maybe a year later, and in that ensuing year, of course, nothing happened. I was a job as a short order cook and an elevator operator at a health club, and you know, it was fun. Again, it was in the analog days, and there was a real community of young theater actors in New York City, and so it was easy to kind of sustain those naive hopes. So that was my first big thing, and then I did ended up on As the World Turns for a while.
My mom was fucking loved As the World Turns.
I made $850 a week, and I would look at that check like it was
That's more than most people make.
Holy shit, man. I mean, it was.
Wait, how many years were you on As the World Turns?
Yeah,
I was only on for about, I want to say, 8 or 9 months. And then I was killed.
So you shot like 1,200 episodes, probably.
That's
what was your character's name on As the World Turns?
Yes, please.
His name was Kevin Gibson, and I was a blue-collar Yale graduate, Yale student with a bad temper, or Harvard, something like that. And I had an earring. I actually wore a post earring, and that was my character. They never had that. Yes,
you never got a real earring.
I did have a real earring. I did, and I wore it. But after a while, apparently they wrote a scene where I had to take it out of my ear. It must have been too much for the audience.
Well, what? That's how I know someone's a bad boy. I see that. I just know. That's amazing. And what brought you out to L.A.?
I'd first done a play at the Taper, the Mark Taper, called Made in Bangkok, and it was written by Anthony Minghella, who wrote English Patient. Among other things. Yeah, and so I did that and got my first taste of L.A. and it was fascinating and interesting. And we're still in the analog times when all this was happening. And then the next year, I auditioned for and first in New York, and then came out here, and then got it. And then I started my LA journey, which I'm still on. I've been living in LA longer than I lived in New York.
Isn't that weird? I have the same experience. I mean, I came out here in '88. Yeah, so it was like it's really strange. And I mean, isn't it? I know you're a dad. Isn't it strange that kids who are like your California kids, like they make fun of the way I pronounce words, and I'm pronouncing them right.
Yeah, they still think that they're New Yorkers. They're still not New Yorkers, man. They're Santa Monica kids, and they skateboard, and they disdain me anyway. It's awful.
They're California kids. They feel real good about themselves, and they walk around their heads up and no insecurity.
Except that's it. Yeah, like surfer dudes. No, they're musicians actually, and they have all the habits of really good musicians. You know, so they look like they just fell out of a boxcar, and they.
How many kids do you have?
I have 11 kids.
Yeah.
No, I have two sons. Yeah, to fuck
no secrets. It's no secrets. You even like to fuck. I mean, it is, and so
yeah. But I was always terrible at it.
Well, I don't know. You might have 11 kids. You don't know.
No, I have two boys. They're 22 and 20, and they're great musicians. I can say without lying, But they're young, and they could give a fuck shit about a guy like me. You know, yeah, they love me grudgingly, I guess.
Aww.
Yeah, they're 20, 22. They have all the hope in the world, I bet.
That's right. And none of my sentiment, like they don't care about how happy I am when I see my Japanese toilet looking at pictures of people who are dead. They're like, no, I don't want any part of that. None of your weepy old man bullshit. Get the fuck away from me. I mean, they'll find out, of course.
Yeah, but I mean, the trade-off is like, we got to live our lives out on a habitable planet. And they're going to fight for water on Fury Road. So it's,
I think they'll blame our generation. I think we win.
One more thing. I got to say, I'm curious your opinion too. I did not know how to feel early on with SAG about I was like, is Fran Drescher up to this task? I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
I there were moments where I was not sure. And I take back every word.
Oh, man.
She came guns a fucking blazing.
Oh.
People, amazing.
A lot of people, have a perception of her as the ha 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 nanny ha ha.
Yeah.
And right. I actually worked with her for a year doing a series that we only did one season of it. And I'd known her from years ago. I'd known her and all that stuff. And superficially, but really got to know her and observe her. And she is a global brand.
I know.
The nanny it's probably seen in another dimension or in a black hole someplace. Everybody, and I only found that out when we went to a network kind of foreign distribution event thing.
Uh-huh.
And let me tell you, people from fucking North Korea were all over her, or maybe not North Korea, but you know, it's like every India, Asia, blah blah, the nanny, the nanny, the nanny, and she has been dealing with this for years. So that's number one. Number two, she is a survivor. She is a rape survivor. She is a cancer survivor. She is a health advocate, and is so smart and driven, and also at the same time funny and sweet, and can be that whole nanny thing. That's a part of her makeup too. Yeah. But like you, when she first, you know, the story was sort of put out that she was in Italy, you know, hobnobbing
with the Kardashians. With fucking Kim Kardashian. I'm like, she took a fucking picture. Get over
and,
it. Come
on. Yeah. And believe me, everybody went, oh, no, oh, great. Yeah, she came out with guns blazing, and that's who she is.
Yeah,
you
I
know,
saw it.
She is awesome. I saw some funny, I guess you kids call it a meme, Jenny, where showed like,
dude, I barely know what that shit is. I have to look at Urban Dictionary more times than I care to mention to know what shit means. So
I tell you. And there was the meme of that showed Linda Hamilton from Terminator saying, this is who we thought would be facing, you know.
I saw that meme.
Right? Oh, that was funny though.
Yeah, artificial, you know, AI. And this is who we got, the nanny.
And,
you know?
And it was the nanny. Yeah. And the hero we needed. No, she... I was, and she brought in that speech, like her outrage and disappointment. Oh, yeah. It was so honest. And
that's
like
her sincerity. The word sincerity.
And when she says the word disgusting.
Oh my God.
Like, it was like, it was such an indictment. But
Danny, when she said disgusting, it was so like crushing, like the way she said it, that I actually felt that she was talking to me and I felt ashamed. Like, it hit me that hard that I felt ashamed. And I'm like, I didn't even do anything wrong, but damn, pressure just came on.
No, like each, like there are each, I want to say nationalities or cultural kind of, you know, every culture, every specific kind of ethnic culture has a strength, you know, which is of course, that speaks to my desire that, not desire, but my theory that, you know, we're all related. Let's just stop the tribalism. But it's like the society is like a now I'm really going off the deep end. I'm not even drunk. You know, like each culture has its strength. And Fran's strength as a Jew from Queens can say the word disgusting like better than anybody, you know, and then there's other cultures that can do another kind of term that can hammer you, you know. But this was, she absolutely channeled that strength, that New York angry, pissed off Jewish woman. Holy shit, she will fuck you up.
When you were saying that, you were like, you felt like wrong, like you thought one thing of her. The first time I got an email from SAG that was like, hey, from your president, Fran Drescher, and I'm like, I just got one from President, you know, Andrea Zuckerman from 90210. You know, I'm like, this is such a funny thing. President Fran Drescher. Ha ha ha. I thought it was funny. And then watching her, I'm like, well, shut my mouth, Jenny. You just sit down. You know what
you're right.
You're talking about?
And there's an object lesson in that in terms of like, you know, the prejudging. A lesson I'll never learn, by the way. Real quick, because we're at the end, and I don't want to promote too much stuff. Jenny, if you had to pick, Stephen, if you had to pick one thing you've been watching online that you sort of like has gotten you through, or reading, or music, is there one thing that's like sort of, or one or two things that like you don't want to give a shout out to?
I mean,
no
I gotta,
pressure. We sprung this.
Yeah, no. I mean, I gotta say that I've been listening to this podcast by this guy named Neil Katyal. Neil Katyal is
I know who he is.
Fantastic legal scholar. He's argued in front of the Supreme Court dozens of times. And he has this podcast where he'll have like somebody who's not necessarily affiliated with the law. And he talks about a case specifically. And this week he's talking about the Dred Scott case. And I only knew that superficially, but suddenly I feel like I'm being taught something and I finally understand what that is. And then the other thing I do is just, I watch old films and I've been watching old, I get suggestions from my mom who's 85 and hilarious. She loves Betty Davis. So I'm watching a lot of Betty Davis films.
Amazing.
And so I've been doing that.
Jenny, how about you?
Okay. So if we're not gonna, are we allowed to promote?
I don't know. Maybe we shouldn't say new current thing. I don't know.
I tell you, yeah, I tell
don't
what
promote
I'll do.
Any TV things. No TV or movies.
I tell you what I'll do. Here's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna tell you the names of some of my favorite working comics right now. And if y'all want to go to their Instagram and they
that's
post
a great
clips,
idea.
Yeah, there's a gal named Kelsey Cook. I don't know if y'all know who that is.
Kelsey Cook. Y'all, put that in our Kelsey, put that in the description.
Yeah, thank Kelsey you. Cook. There is a gal named Liza Traeger that I've done stand up with.
She's great.
Like certain people that when I see, I'm like, oh my god, this person is absolutely Von DiCarlo. I'm sure if y'all we've had Mary Lynn Rice Cub on before, yeah, but yeah. I've do stand up with her.
I love her.
Me too.
Oh, she's so great. I'm trying to think of some other folks that I've seen. Like, there's a guy named Nate Welch that does those. Like, I met him through Jeff Ross when I opened for Jeff Ross, and he was the host of it. Really, really funny comic. He does a lot of that shit that I could never do. By the way, when they do like a roast battle thing at the Comedy Store every Tuesday, I've judged those. Every time Jeff Ross is like, hey, Jenny, you want to do that? I'm like, do you know how upset I would be if somebody just looked me head to toe and started ripping me apart? I'm like, it's hard enough for me to be standing on stage right now. I'd
love
but
it.
But there's certain people like this guy, Frank Castillo, amazing. Yeah. So,
do you know Gary Vidor? Gary Vidor or Vidor? Do you know him? Gary Vidor? I see him on Instagram. He's hilarious. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry, interrupt.
No, sorry, but I. Karen Mills is another great comic. She tours with Leanne Morgan, who we've had, and really really funny. So there's some comics to like.
Those are good.
Look out for online and like go and find their videos wherever you can find videos and.
But you
really
also do a lot of. Don't you do scrimshaw as well? In your spare time. Doesn't Jenny do scrimshaw?
She does that. I mean, she's moving away from lace related crafts. I think.
This is tusks that you engraving on tusks.
Right. What am I thinking of with the right scrimshaw is when you engrave the tusk. What is the
scrimshaw needle was point? Scrimshaw was when you're on a bed and three gentlemen walk behind you. And
no, Jenny.
It does sound like if I just said that to someone who didn't know, they would be like, whoa, really? What? Keep going. That's what scrimshaw.
Okay. You just
my only thing, I'll give one thing I've been watching because it bridges both worlds, things that like are cats and stuff. I've been on YouTube and just Dr. Katz they're all on YouTube and one comes on after the other and I'm remembering like how funny old comics are but how the relationship between Dr. Katz and John Benjamin is like it's so fucking funny and that's just been like a joy. That's what I've done the last week while I'm not sweating my ass off on the picket line.
But before, like,
hold on, wait, what were you saying, Stephen?
No, nothing.
I have
nothing.
To say, no, you. I want you to, but I'm going to pay you a compliment, Stephen, and I'm going to pay it in a way that I can because it's strike times.
Yeah, go.
But you were on this one show, and you did play someone who's from the same place that Putin runs.
Oh yeah, yes, and he had an eye issue.
Yeah, there was an eye, like it looked like me if I smoked weed when one eye
tweet.
Just,
that's right.
You know, just one eye just goes that. I have to say that was the hardest. I probably watched that episode now four times.
She texted me after watching it, by the way, because I recommended this show to her, and then listen to the podcast. You'll know probably what show we're talking about. But Steven, it was like that was amazing.
You recommended the show in that episode. I was texting Danny. I'm like, I'm crying. Like tears were running down my face. Like your performance was so fucking funny.
It was the most favorite thing I've ever done.
I love hearing that.
And that makes me
know I like that. Not to be all Pollyanna, but that means that the most favorite thing you've ever done could still be ahead. You know what I mean? It's like I really do believe that. Like you have these moments where you think, and it's like, wait, that thing is, and I like that. So
the best now, is yet to come. And won't
I know,
it
now?
Fine?
I'm gonna sit down and write a script now about a German guy with a bad eye.
Yeah, no, I know. Well, Stephen, honestly, thank you so much. Thank you for all this. Thank you for supporting the strike even before you were part of it. Thank you for just being an excellent, funny voice on Twitter of the resistance. And thank you for just being a funny guy. We need more of that.
Thank you. Good to see you, Danny, old boy, and Jenny, old girl. It's good.
It was really fun just for the fact that we were talking about you. If y'all listen to our previous podcast, you'll know what show we were talking about.
I won't listen to you.
Please don't. You shouldn't.
You won't, but our audience, they'll know what we're talking about. But
do you have an audience? Do you have a big audience?
Oh, my God. We have hundreds, if not 10. Stephen, stick around for the picture, but we're just going to say goodbye, Doing It Nation. We'll see you later. Support writers, support actors, support workers.
That's right.
Yes. Support all that stuff. And if you're in LA and you come to the Comedy Store this weekend, guess who's going to be on
stage? My God. The great Jenny Johnson. And according
to the great Jenny Johnson,
who raved about her.
Yeah, no, it's like the greatest. It's an experience is what people call it.
You'll remember where you were, like the Kennedy assassination. That's what they
say. 100%.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doing It Nation.